as it comes to creating art and sharing it with others. And whether it relates to music or not directly, I think that we're going to find out an awful lot about this gentleman and his approach to creativity. A little bit of background, Russell is a recipient of the National Endowment for the Arts Fellowship in Poetry and a graduate at Western Michigan University's MFA program. Growing up in Detroit, working in the band life, so he did a little bit of the music thing. We love that, of course, here at WHFR, and then started publishing, and we are looking forward to learning more about his times as poet in residence in the Mojave National Preserve, as well as about some of his rock poems and his latest publication entitled Somewhere We'll Leave the World, poems by Russell Thorburn. And why are we talking about these topics? Well, we are very excited to have snagged Russell to our college campus coming up very soon. And Nancy, you contributed to that whole process. So why don't you begin?
Okay. In terms of his coming, well, the joy and blessing to have been mentored by Russell on my first poetry book. And I never thought it would happen until we began working together, and the energy is good. And he kept saying, go back to the well. And I kept groaning and going back to the well and trying to produce more. And he still does it. So I'm really grateful. We've become fast friends. And he's coming to, and maybe he can tell us more about, there's a Thursday night, the 21st reading, and then an event for my book on Saturday, the 23rd. But the one for Henry Ford College is on that Friday morning at 10. He'll visit Ruth Ann Schmidt's creative writing class. But it is an event open to anyone who wants to come in the vote room. And Russell is, I've watched him, he's a fabulous teacher. He engages the students in a way that makes them very comfortable about finding their own voices.
Wonderful. Russell, we're glad that you're coming to meet you in person and to have you share some of your creativity with us. But when you go on a tour of sorts, sharing your work and talking about your work, particularly when it comes to students, what's in it for you? Why do you make that a priority in your life?
Well, I like the creative energy with the students. I had a blast last year with the Ruth Ann's class, and so I'm looking forward to doing that. It felt very welcome, and then some very free-willing things happened in that class format. And I really agree, Nancy is incredibly creative, and I'm glad I was able to contribute something to her publications.
And that's very modest, Russell.
It's the truth. It's the truth.
And well, I was going to ask Nancy about it, but why don't you tell us a little bit about her publication then?
You want Russ to?
Yeah.
That's great. I'm listening.
So we're talking about My Heart Wears No Colors.
That's
yes,
correct.
Your most recent body of work.
Sorry.
Well, I'm in on Civil War poems and the perspective of that from both sides. And I like the history and the poetry involved in that, the stories. And so I think I encouraged Nancy to keep going back to that essence of time traveling back to that, those days. And then I'm also speaking of her other book as well, and about time traveling. So, there's a portal, you just go through it, and then you just kind of magically imagine, remember, build, and, sing these songs.
Interesting you say sing these songs. And so you're talking about singing songs with words, which most songs are sung with words, and musical notes, of course, but you know a little something about that. I don't know if it's the singing necessarily, but the making of the music. And it sounds like you apply your musical background into your writing today, and it sounds like you've inspired Nancy to do some of the same thing. Why is that so important?
I like playing the piano, okay? It's like you need kind of an escape from teaching, from the world and stuff. So, when I close the door of the practice room, it's me and the piano, and I'm playing usually, set songs on a page with chords, but it's all memory muscle, basically. This goes way back to my Birmingham days on Harmon Street, where I had an old upright grand in our den, and I would just, you know, the high school days, I would just go in there and play. Then we had a garage band. We actually moved the piano into the garage,
which was literally,
you know, quite an experience, actually.
Well, during my garage band days, we lived in Indian Village in Detroit. We had a ballroom up on the third floor, so we had to carry the piano up the stairs, and that was our instead of a garage, we were up in the a ballroom dance band or something like that.
Well, those candles are heavy, especially upright.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we've all got our story of how we started, and it's interesting to see, you know, to sort of track a career and track the progression of where the sort of the point of origin of creativity comes from, and then where it leads us to and guides us and meanders and so on. So you're speaking of your time in Detroit and, as you said, Birmingham, in that situation. So working with bandmates is one thing, but working as a creative author on your own is another bit, you know, entirely. So how different of a switch was it to be collaborating creatively with a group of people versus kind of going off on your own and doing this sort of solo, if you will?
Well, I just had in January a huge event, an evening with Edgar Allan Poe, which involved five musicians, Two actors who read, you know, very seriously on some, you know, the big poems of Edgar, The Raven, The Sleeper, and The Conqueror Worm, which I provided music for, actually. So, you know, I like having the band format, basically, and, you know, we had to rehearse, of course, and so these guys rallied together, and we had a great night. I mean, I really enjoyed it. So, but I had the concepts there, like the poems. Mm-hmm. It was all Edgar Allan Poe's. And he has a very short format in ballads, songs, very lyrical. So they're all set up for, you know, for music and so forth. But, you know, I write and try to keep the musical line in my head, or hearing the words, or having some sense of the music in there. And that's how I've been, you know, working lately, I guess.
When we talk about inspiration, oftentimes songwriters will credit an experience or a person or a community as their inspiration. And I'm assuming that some of that took place for you, as I'm guessing it does for most creative writers. Your time at the Mojave National Preserve as poet in residence, what time in your career did that happen? And I can only imagine what kind of inspiration you must have found in that vista.
Oh, that's a whole other story. that's California. I went with my son. We were both, you know, he called me up and said, "Oh, we got this artisan residency, Dad," and that's, you know, for like 3 weeks in the Mojave Desert. So, you know, I flew in, and we went out there, and we stayed at this Desert Studies Center. But it was like incredible because I was in 105 degree heat, you know, looking at the old dad mountains and those tramping through the dust, you know, like an old gunfighter trying to survive the next 6 miles without any water. And so I thought of it like a film. It was like a very filmic experience for me. And I imagined these stories of these people within the desert area there. And so, my son took photographs, and we have a book out of that as well. But that was a journey. The California days, you know, I began this journey, and which came from the desert and then ended up being the poet laureate of the Upper Peninsula. So that kind of continued on, and so each thing just kept this journey onward, you know, one thing after another, basically. So I'm just, you know, it's like a 5-year journey right now for me.
Wow.
Going on six, seven, I guess.
Time flies, huh? I know just recently this past week, my son and I were in Nevada for a small trip, and we went to a place called Valley of Fire, which for him was the first time experiencing anything remotely as just different and beautiful as that. If anyone knows the area, it's just this beautiful red rock and these caverns and canyons and caves and things. And it took a while. I have video of him doing this, but he made his way into a cave, kind of set far back, and it took him 5-7 minutes to get into the cave, and he was in there for a little while. Then he came back out, and then later in the evening, he said, "You know, I went into that cave a boy, and I came out a man." He said, "My life has changed forever after having experienced it." And he's 19 years old, and he's a young man, of course, but he was serious. We were laughing with him, and he's like, "That was life-changing. That literally changed his life." And he was not too proud to admit it, or he was proud to admit it, let's put it that way. So I think those that have had some type of a sort of a physical experience like that, having a change of scenery, having something like that take place, to be inspired in such a way to want to write about it and then share that inspiration with others is pretty amazing. I'm holding undocumented Great Lakes Poet Laureate on Social Justice in my hand right now. And tell us a little bit about this, Russell. Tell us about this publication.
Well, I have one in my hand as well.
Right now, I have mine because of you, so thank you.
So, yeah, I just got mine yesterday. Andrea Scarpino, you know, was the poet laureate up here after me, and she was, like, one of the editors with Ron Reike on this book. But, you know, I know Andrea well, and so she kind of was the female muse, I think, behind this book. And you know, they asked for some poems. You know, I sent two poems, and one was related to a 1926 mine disaster, the Barnes Hecker mine disaster in Nagani, and the other one was about the Detroit riots with Willie Horton standing up on top of his car and shouting. He's still in his baseball uniform, shouting, you know, "Stop what you're doing" and stuff. So they opted with probably the UP related material instead. So, you know, I'm just very pleased to be, you know, in this book. It's Great Lakes Poets Laureate on Social Justice, and it's all the Great Lakes regions, which and I'm just kind of discovering the poems in the book myself.
It's fascinating. Alan, you're going to love this book. This is really interesting.
Well, I guess the question I have, and probably also for Nancy as well, is and just like songwriters or even filmmakers, it seems like the creative process is built around finding a time and a space where things happen, I guess, to a certain extent, whether it is things you know, rooted in the Civil War or a particular point in time, such as, you know, 1967 Detroit or the, you know, obviously vast and open landscapes of the Mojave Desert. How does an artist, you know, I mean, what... I guess I'm just eternally curious about how you find, you know, that inspiration in that place and in that time.
Should I begin?
Yeah, go ahead.
Mine
yeah.
came out of my research for a memoir about my grandmother who died having my mother, and I actually did a program on here about 3 years ago. Thank you for that.
Sure.
And when I visited, I found the gravestones of my great-grandfather and other people had Confederate units and battalion information. And here I am, a social justice progressive person who believes in the good humanity and justice and against unfairness and what happened with the slavery. I started researching it, and that's when Rusk lit the fire of that particular cauldron, because I went in and I began researching the battles, because I found their infantries and where they were at what time. So I was actually able to be my great-grandfather and speak somewhat like Whitman does in Vigil Strange. And Russ has a Vigil Strange poem also, which we're going to be reading together at an event upcoming. So what happened for me was that I left who I was in my own time, and even my gender, went back in my bloodline and imagined being these people. Some of them were males, some were females, and I knew when they'd lost children. I knew the background and context for my mother staying with her aunt for 3 years after her mother died and how the aunt felt, because I had researched all that for the other book and then it came out in poetry. So I was very blessed. And to have Russ there saying what he did, basically, to continue.
Yeah, those emotional bones, Nancy, are so stirring, and they run this very deeply for me. I mean, I've converted two of her poems into songs. She'll be reading the poems, of course, and I'll be having some background music. And then the one poem is very, well, it's in like B flat, and it's kind of like a battle, the Hattiesburg poem. And I was rocking out today.
Oh, good. I love that. I haven't heard any
rocking
of this.
Out to Nancy Owen Nelson.
Does it take a certain amount of courage to do it, or do you just like surrender yourself to the process at some point in terms of once you decide to go down that path?
Me?
Yeah.
After I figured out I had something to say and somebody who knew that I did thought I did, then that helped me, because I've put off my poetry for many years doing prose and other things and teaching. And I hope you're hearing this and remembering, Russ, that you are the person who gave me that confidence. So I guess the courage only came with what was there, but also with somebody saying on the side, go for it, keep doing it, dig deeper.
And Russ, where do you find those, you know, those places, those spaces, those times that sort of, you know, that you inhabit in order to bring the stories?
Oh, the geography of space. I like films. I like imagining, you know, the scene and being in that particular place. And I usually, no, not always. I try to be, you know, within the moment in poems, like, you know, like Cold Snap and then having the flu and type of things. But I also focus in on, like the poem in Undocumented, you know, the ghost that comes back on November 3rd, 19, you know, after the Mayan disaster. He returns on the anniversary of the Mayan disaster to haunt the bosses of the Mayans, because basically it wasn't good work conditions and they could have prevented a lot of
this is rooted in the UP then, right? Yeah.
Yes, this is the Nagani.
Yeah, right.
Mayan disaster. But I feel, you know, very strong roots to Detroit. My great grandfather Henry Zender ran a tavern in Detroit, and I have all my, you know, roots right there. And so when I go back and, you know, visit Nancy and her husband Roger, it feels like, wow, it's like I'm coming home. I can feel that.
And you have your U of M cup. Oh, did I make a boo-boo?
That's okay.
In our kitchen.
They exist. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Yeah, they do. They do. Nancy has pulled up that particular poem that you're speaking of right now. What page is that on in the book?
Page 63.
Okay. Nancy, would you care to read just a small excerpt from
sure.
that?
Sure. Russ, do you think the first segment would be enough, Russ?
Read the middle one.
Okay.
Let me rise and breathe in the cold.
Okay. Well, this title is amazing. I return to the surface of the earth wearing my miner's helmet with its third eye is the title. Let me rise and breathe in the cold, goose-like as a ghost circle, chimney smoke straggling from homes. I was the lost man in the mine to die, to moan my wife's name, see her round face and golden brown hair before breath, made slaves of all of us, wanting air before our death in November. We expected snow over muddy ground, children to whoop and yell for lost souls on All Hallows' Eve, for a sea beast to surface from Lake Superior's gray, choppy foam, for the witch to ride her beanpole through the chill and cut a silhouette besides a hungry moon, one day of the year for those souls to construct a show.
Wow.
I know, it's strong.
It's very visual. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's very good, Nancy.
Yeah, beautiful.
And that comes from Undocumented, the book, yes.
Yeah, it's so nice when somebody else that gets it, reads it, for another
I didn't
author,
practice.
Poet.
Yeah, that was
beautiful.
Do that.
No, that was beautiful. And Nancy, I'd like to speak briefly. You hinted to I believe Nanny B, who you're referring to as your
my mother and my grandmother
and your grandmother.
Yeah.
Yes. So your memoir, Searching for Nanny B, Connecting Three Generations of Southern Women, right. 3 years. Published now, mm-hmm. 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. Wow! And you do have in your new piece, you have something entitled "Nanny B. Russell."
Yes,
is that an excerpt from that? Okay,
mm-hmm. It's actually she's speaking, and then someone's speaking to her after she passes.
Oh gosh!
Yeah. So, and maybe I could say briefly about the roots. I don't have them. So I found them because I was an Army kid, and I went back to the South and was looking for where I belonged, and even though I'm not living there, I found it within these people. Mm-hmm. So I had to kind of work through that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We have two established poets, two established authors in our studio, one physically and one sort of via phone, but sort of spiritually. And I guess I would be remiss as a teacher myself if I didn't ask about starting the process for a young college student, for a high schooler, for a six-year-old that is showing some interest in using words creatively. What do we do as teachers, as adults, as parents, to help encourage or stimulate this desire and this interest to share what's going on inside of these creative people's heads?
I would say to create a safe space where there's no judgment for whatever the child or the young person is expressing. I have taught writing for years, and the same process goes with you do if you do a personal narrative. I think when I was speaking for Ruth Ann's class a couple weeks ago, I told them that sometimes you go to deep and scary places and sometimes it's painful, but it's okay if you have audience, teacher, parent, listener, reader, whoever, who says it's okay whatever you do here, because this is your voice. Okay, so that would be my mm-hmm. basic
it's great
beginning.
Advice. Yeah, yeah, great advice. Russ, how about you? What would you suggest?
Well, I've had such splendid, joyous times with many different ages. I was like the poet in residence for some school districts up here. The last one was Negaunee Middle School, actually. So I had like 120 sixth graders, not about the same time, but 30 in the class. And very small classrooms. We would do these wildly joyous things. The last thing I did there was a Absiderian poem. This is like a return visit, where each student was assigned a letter of the alphabet to write, you know, maybe like 5 or 10 lines beginning with A, B, and C and stuff. So I came like an orchestra conductor and picked out 2 or 3 lines from each alphabet student. And I think X and Y had to double up because there's only one person. So we lined everybody up and we read, wow, straight through A to Z. It was like libretto. It was like music. It was incredible, involving geography, rivers, the climate, other Canadian, Mexican artists because they were studying that. So I kind of dipped into their curriculum. I really enjoyed that. I mean,
you've made several references to music, and obviously, you know, we talked about the Garage Band and conducting this group. Obviously, a collection of rock poems. The Jukebox was the jury of their love. Obviously, musical inspiration there. You know, what is the line between what we think of when we think of music and lyrics and when we think of poetry?
It's a very thin line.
Okay. Well, just it's come up several times. I was just curious. Yeah, in your mind, you know, what you know, are they one in the same?
I think of a poem as like you know, song performance. I mean, not like, you know, in rhyme patterns or anything like
right.
that.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
The music within the line and the overall effect of, you know, reading a poem or writing a poem. And I have these visions of things, basically themes like One of the poems in the jukebox is John Lennon in Santa Monica, you know, and his son Julian is visiting him, and, you know, he's on the beach. Nobody ages very well in the California, so I think it's the first line.
So,
he's there, and it's kind of a dream poem. I like relating also poems to dreams, the vision that you have. And so, I mean, they just happen. I mean, they're almost supernatural in a way. I can't explain it.
No, and I truly appreciate that. In my mind, I guess probably and again, I'm not a poet, but if I had to pick a distinction, is I think of poems that are something that are primarily read, whereas music is meant to be performed, or maybe that's not as clear-cut a line in terms of, you know, when you talk about lyricism in poems.
Well, I had a band called Radio On. There was like six of us, I believe, a sextet. And we would rehearse. It was like, well, 10 below this one winter. It was only like 2 years ago, three maybe. And, okay, we just have a creative idea. Jeremy Morlock would play a riff on his 11-string guitar, and then, oh, I have a poem for that. And then we kind of work out the words with the music, and then, you know, we recorded all this as well. So I have, this is on Bandcamp under Radio On. So, you know, this is something that happens spontaneously, some of these collaborations like that. Some of them, you know, are conscious songs, of course, you know, we did later, but the original concept was just that spark, that one note that would, okay, that one chord I would hear from the guitar and or the other guitar. So, okay, let's do it like this. And then, so it just kind of happened. I kind of miss those days.
I have a question. Russ, this book is, the jukebox is not out yet, right?
No, it's on Finishing Line Press. It'll be out late summer, early fall, I'm not sure. And my good friend Rodney Torson is another poet laureate of Grand Rapids, who is the other writer of that.
Okay.
It was Rod's idea, actually, years ago to start writing these rock poems.
Yeah.
We've been very passionate about it for many years, and so this is a true labor of love if there ever was one, really.
Oh, it sounds great. We love the music, of course, here at WHFR. When we talk, sort of piggybacking on Alan's question, when you come up with something, poetry as it relates to music, listening to music and or creating music, bandmates creating music, do you sing it or do you speak it typically?
Well, I work with vocalists, but like if I'm reading a poem like Billy the Kid, which is a poem in the Wayne State book, the first track on Radio On, which I encourage everybody to, you know, take a listen, it's free on Bandcamp, and it's there's a certain cadence, there's a rhythm there that I caught with the two guitars. One guitar is like you know, an overdub of a second guitar, but it's a very strong riff of Billy the Kid, you know, and it works. It has a kind of an outlaw feel with Jeremy's guitar work, and then so there's a sequence of those type of poems and tracks combined with music.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really sing. I rely on several vocalists to do that.
Sure. There. Okay. Curious. We have an event again on campus here at Henry Ford College on Friday the 22nd, just next Friday, starting at 10 o'clock. And so this is our own Ruth Ann Schmidt's creative
correct.
Writing class,
and
Russell will be there. The class will be held at the Vote Room at the Eshelman Library here on campus, open to the public as well. This particular event, 10 until maybe, what, 10:30 or 11?
10 until 11-ish.
Till 11-ish.
It may start a little after 10 because it's a class period, but people can come on in when they want.
Okay, fantastic. So. And Nancy, I know that there's a book preview event going on the next day. Yes,
yes
for
yes,
you.
Yes.
Would
mm-hmm.
you would you share that
sure.
event with us, please?
I am a member of the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Detroit, and the historic house down there is over 100 years old. is a great space for a book launch. So Russ and I will be launching My Heart Wears No Colors, and we'll both be reading. And I'll be getting to hear, probably the day before, these wonderful melodies or chords that he has created for two of my poems, and the jury's out as to whether I sing or read, although I do sing some. But and it'll be 2 o'clock, and I guess the thing is, if anybody wanted to RSVP or find out more information, just email me at nnelson@hfcc.edu. Be happy to give you details. Should be about an hour and a half. Thank you for that.
Wonderful. You're very welcome. We thank you both for your time today. It's always so interesting to be able to sort of hear about the creative process and hear about what went into the book, which I'm not saying the book is the end result. In some cases, it's just a step along, you know, along the journey. Mm-hmm. But for those of us that are not necessarily particularly creative in terms of our writing skills, the admiration, I think, that goes into the discipline side as well as the creative side of creating something like this that ultimately gets to be shared with others. So we thank you, Nancy Owen Nelson, so much for your time,
and
Russell Thorburn for your time from a very cold, colder environment. But we do think we have turned that corner, so that's a good thing. But looking forward to hearing more and reading more from both of you. So we, again, are very grateful for your time.
Lights spill into the desert.
Radio On, featuring one of our guests on the WHFR Journal today, Russ Thorburn, and Billy the Kid, one of the tracks that he mentioned we talked about a little bit earlier on in the interview. It's available on bandcamp.com. Radio On is the name of the group. Obviously, Russ, also a very accomplished author, poet laureate of the Upper Peninsula, and our honored guest, along with Nancy Nelson, from Henry Ford College on today's edition of the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek. Susan McGraw, it's been great spending this hour with you and our listeners.
Oh, likewise. Glad to be back. And we look forward to continued exciting things on the WHFR Journal. As always, if you've got ideas, go to our website and give us a shout, or go to our website and look at some of the other shows we're playing. Lots to be looked at and listened to. So we thank you for your time today.
Highway 61 is up next. Don't go anywhere.
Hey, hey, this is the Gothabilly Man, your friendly neighborhood beatnik, Alan, of the Wrecking Hours Rockabilly, Psychabilly, and Surf Rock Radio Show, and I am a volunteer DJ.
Hi, this is Terrence Tyson of the Play It By Ear Jazz Show, and I am a volunteer DJ.
This is Lisa, the diva from Lyrical Infusion, and I am a volunteer DJ.
This is Jonathan, host of Songwriters Symposium. All of us here at WHFR volunteer to bring you the musical programming that you hear. Thank you for listening.
Excuse me, miss. Would it be okay if I asked you a few questions about the radio station?
Yeah.
Great. First, could you introduce yourself?
I'm Mrs. Robinson.
In your opinion, what is the best program to have ever graced the airwaves here or anywhere in the world? Perhaps there is a DJ you consider the pinnacle of perfection who you yourself try to emulate?
Scrockin' Your Potatoes, Mike D. Mike D.
Oh,
Mike D.
That's the Mike program D. on Mike right D. before Mike yours, D. Sunday D. evenings from 7 until 9 p.m. Where can listeners hear that again?
It's right here on the station making waves, WHFR.FM.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio featuring local and independent artists.
way that I know. It run from the Twin Cities down to the Gulf of Mexico. Traveling all the time, and that's why my baby stays.